Total Tuscany Podcast, number 22. Ciao, and welcome to another edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice, joined again this week by my good friend, co-publisher of TotalTuscany.com, Mr. Pat Capagna. Hello, Pat.
Travis, having a fantastic day. How about you?
I am too. And don't forget, you can find the Total Tuscany Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and the Windows Media Store. You know, it is fall here in the United States where we record this podcast, and that means we're coming up on harvest season where we live. But we are also coming up on harvest season in Italy.
And we need to know more about harvest season.
You know, we have these romanticized dreams of what harvest is about in Italy. You know, getting your hands dirty, picking the grapes by hand, and just being part of that experience is something I think you and I wish we could do. Just experience once.
Just want to be there for the harvest meals and the truffles and the olive oil and everything that goes with it, the fire in the fireplace.
Is it really that of a romantic experience? Well, we thought we would go to an estate in Tuscany and find out firsthand just how great harvest is.
And not just any estate. We went to an estate that produces what?
Brunello. And it's the Il Palzoni estate in Montalcino. And Laura Gray is our guest on today's Total Tuscany Podcast. Laura, we are fascinated by the harvest season because Pat and I always have this Tuscan or Italian dream that we want to go there and we want to be in the fields and pick grapes. And we've seen all the movies and read the stories. Is harvest season as romantic as it seems?
I'd love to answer yes to that, but sadly, no. It's a different kind of work rhythm. The days are extremely long. They start with washing crates as early as 5:30 or 6 in the morning, and they might finish 12 hours later washing those same crates again. But you always have to hire extra staff. So there's just a kind of party atmosphere, even though it's hard work. We have 5 full-time staff, but we swell to 15. So it's just a different time outside between the people who are picking. And we do have a big lunch at the end, which is called La Benfinita, to celebrate the end of harvest. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to ruin your own fantasy of picking grapes, because it's almost impossible to have people pick for you, because it breaks so many Italian laws, health and safety, employment. You'd be illegal immigrants for me. You can't offer free labor. So it's not as easy as one might think, although you may have seen Sting has managed to do it. He is charging people to pick for him.
Wow, that's a good deal. You charge somebody to pick for you. But
it was big this year, €262 a day. I'm going to be looking into it. I'll let you know.
Well, because I think people do want to do that. I mean, that's very enlightening, because I've always, you know, Googled and looked for, hey, can we go over there and participate in the harvest season? And I've never been able to find such a tour. And you just answered that question for me, is that there are so many Italian laws that, well, I can't go pick grapes with you.
Yeah, no, it's actually very complicated to do. And the other thing, for example, for us, we're extremely small. We have 12 acres. And so our harvest might take 4 days. So it's not really something that you can have somebody plan a holiday around. I still don't know when we're starting or when we're finishing, for that matter. So it's not something that you can organize or structure very well with a small property. And it's also, in a way, the culmination of our year's work. So we're quite reluctant to give it to unskilled people. You know, no offense, but it's important that the people who do it know what they're doing.
Il Palzoni in Montalcino is the estate. Laura Gray is our guest, and we're coming up on harvest season.
So, Laura, tell us, how many 12 acres of plots, how much wine does that actually produce? And olive oil and whatever else the...
Well, it's 12 acres of vineyard, and from that we make between 5,000 and 10,000 bottles. Our production numbers vary enormously because one of the rules for producing Brunello is that you're not allowed to intervene with the vagaries of the climate. So, for example, it's obligatory dry farming. We can't irrigate. And similarly, you know, we can't use all that wonderful technology, the smudge pots and helicopters and hail nets and vents and all the rest of it. So as a result, every vintage is picking your way through this set of moving variables, which is the weather. And since we're trying really hard to guarantee the quality of our wine, what we can't guarantee is the quantity. So this year, for example, which has been, let's say, challenging, is the polite way of putting it, we will be making much less wine. And that's, you know, in the hopes of making a decent wine. We've had to make some very, very difficult choices in the vineyard. And our hope at this stage is that they'll pay off.
Can you tell early on how good a vintage is going to be? I was reading a review by John Fodera just last night, as before we recorded this, and he got to barrel taste your 2000 reserve, and he gave that between already like a 95 and a 98, but that's not technically a Brunello yet because it's not ready. So, but
no, 2010 reserve will be out in 2016.
In 2016, so it takes 6 years for.
Yeah, reservas come out in the sixth year after harvest. Vintage comes out on the fifth year after harvest. So it's not quite 5 years, given that harvest is normally in October, let's say. But we will be releasing our 2010 vintage this January. And we are excited. I mean, it's been billed as one of the vintages of the century, which seems slightly premature, you know, given that we're only in 14. But still, it's a really great, great year. Very exciting.
So do you know during harvest kind of, hey, this is going to be a special harvest, we can tell by the grapes? I mean, how do you tell that it's going to be that great of a vintage?
Well, there's obviously this is my husband's area of expertise, so I'll try not to give away too many of his secrets. But you know, there's the thickness of the skin, the pippiness, the sweetness of the grape, the proportion of flesh or the pulp of the grape to the skin. All of those things can impact on the way the wine will turn out, and also last year we had a wonderful month of September of huge differences between day and nighttime temperatures. So I can only do this in Celsius, but daytime temperatures of maybe 33 and nighttime of under 10. So a massive diurnal, you know, variation. And what that meant was that the grapes had everything they needed to become flavor ripe and all of the aromatics developed. And so there are things that if they happen, and if you have obviously healthy grapes, if the season's gone well, you haven't had problems with mold or mildew or hail or heavy rain or all the other things that can plague you, you can begin to hope. But until every last crate of grapes is in the cellar, you know, there's no, you can't imagine quite how things are going to be, because they can all go wrong right at the last minute. So you know, is it not even considered very, very, you know, you might not even say what you think until it's in and safe. Mm-hmm.
So basically, you close your eyes and cross your fingers.
Well, yeah. I always get, you know, very neurotic around harvest time, because there's always a point where it's good enough. And that's usually when all the, you know, the weather is about to break, things are about to go wrong. And obviously, as the urban person I am at heart, that's when I would pick. But my husband is a indigenous Montalcinese, and he has a hunter, a fisherman, forager sense about these things. You know, he's somebody who consults the moon before he cuts his fingernail. So he has a different take. And the fact that I can maybe pull 8 internet forecasts for rain doesn't shake his feeling that it won't rain on our plots. And so he always waits that extra day or two, which is often what, you know, turns a wine from being good to being great. But it's always a very nerve-wracking time. And I think, you know, Montalcino is full of people going, do you think we should pick now? Do you think we should pick now? And other people overruling them, as in our case.
So once the harvest actually starts, Laura, how long does it take? Is it all done in just a few days, or does it a couple?
Yeah,
of
well, it depends, of course, how much is on the vine. It depends if some years you know it rains and you have to wait for the grapes to dry out, so it might be drawn out over a week or so. But in an ideal scenario, it would be, in our case, it would be 4 or 5 days of very hard work.
And it's all done by, you know, when we think of harvest where we're located, you know, the combines get in the field and they pick it. Everything's done by hand still traditionally, correct?
Oh, of course. Montalcino is obviously, it's a hill, so there's often the vineyards are on quite a slope. So you're walking up and down, before the pickers come, we strew these 5-kilo crates up and down the vineyards. And so you always have a crate pretty close to you. You fill it up and heave it along, and then you leave it underneath the vines so that the tractor can come in and gather them. So it's a combination of bending and dragging, and then some, you usually have two people whose job is to lift up the crates and put them onto the back of the tractor.
You know, before we started, you had mentioned to us that there is an upper elevation and a lower elevation as far as where your grapes are located. How big of an elevation differential is that, and what's the difference in the grapes and what's produced out of those elevations?
Oh, very, very good question. We actually have three plots. We have where the cellar is, which is 540 meters above sea level, and it's northwest facing, and we're surrounded by woodland, so uncontaminated, lots of cross-pollination, gorgeous aromatics. If anything, it can be a bouquet-heavy vineyard. It depends. If it's a hot year, it's wonderful. In a cooler year, sometimes there's not enough body. So in order to compensate that, we have a low-lying vineyard, which is in an area of Montalcino that is very popular. We actually have 17 neighbors there, a hotspot, literally a hotspot. So it's in a part of town where, well, town, countryside, of course, where the sea came twice in prehistoric times. So there's a very particular saline deposit, marine fossils, different pH. It's very special down there. And it's in a basin as well and south facing. And those vines are between 120 and 180 meters above sea level. So there's a huge difference. It's only 8 miles away. So, and in fact, those grapes are the ones we'll be picking first. They could be ready to pick by the end of next week. Whereas our high elevation, we may wait until the 5th or the 6th of October. It really depends.
Laura, my next questions are going to kind of display how little I know, but but you know, I don't.
Better you than me. Keep them coming.
I do a fine job of it. Is this wine? Is this a combination? Is this a blend of more than one type of grape? And how old are these vines?
We only make Brunello di Montalcino, DOCG, Denominazione di Origine Controllata e Garantita. And one of the cardinal rule of that governs everybody who wants to make Brunello is that it be only one grape, which is Sangiovese Grosso, which here in Montalcino we call Brunello. So you can technically say Brunello is made of Brunello. But Sangiovese Grosso is a common Tuscan grape, but Brunello must be 100%. So I only have Sangiovese vineyards. I may have mentioned blending at some point, but when I say blending, I mean blending the three vineyards that are all Sangiovese.
Okay.
Authorized for the production of Brunello.
And just how old are these vines?
Well, the low-lying ones date from the late 80s, and the ones around the cellar are, we replanted them in 2004. So the Palazzone has been making wine since the mid-80s, but we replanted all the vineyards in 04. So they're 10 years old this year.
And how long can vines last? Again, we are wine novices. I mean, will those vines last 20, 30, 100 years? How long are vines good for?
Well, it depends on lots of things, but vines can. I mean, there are 100-year-old vines in the world. In Montalcino, because you can only plant on authorized land, and what happens as a vine gets older is it starts self-selecting. So you get wonderful grapes, but fewer and fewer bunches. And in our case, because there's been a freeze in authorizations for the production of Brunello, so technically you really can't grow. So I don't think there's much incentive to have a trophy vineyard that's extremely, extremely low production. Generally, after 20, 30 years maximum, you just rip them out and plant them again. There's very little sentimental, old vine worship here, I would say.
Now, on your website, you mentioned that you only make Brunello, but on your website, your products have a Lorenzo and an Isabella IGT and a Rosa del Palzoni VR. Now, so you have a Rosa and then a Super Tuscan as well?
Well, the Lorenzo and Isabella, we only made it once.
Okay.
We made 6,000 bottles of the 2005 vintage, which were released in 07.
Okay.
So it does exist, but it's not something that we make regularly.
Okay.
It's rather wonderful. It's what's known as a Super Tuscan, so it's a blend of different grapes. But we made it an homage wine made to honor the owner's parents, and as such, it was only made once. Whereas our Rosso is not a Rosso di Montalcino, which is the classic drop-down appellation that most Brunello producers make. Our Rosso is a non-vintage blend, so it's blended across the vineyards and across the vintages. I'm always hesitant to use the word baby Brunello, but it is 100% Sangiovese from our vineyards that has spent some time in wood, and it has no year on it because it's a mix of vintages. Because it's a guilt-free, quaffing Saturday night wine. It doesn't have to be somebody's birthday to drink our Rosso. It's a more, different price range and a different kind of wine.
Now, when it comes to Brunello's, I mean, the region is so precise, and right around Montalcino. How big is Il Pozzoni compared to other vineyards? I mean, are you a small, are you medium, are you large?
No, we're definitely small, but the majority of producers, I mean, there are over 200 producers in Montalcino, and the majority of producers are small. There are very few medium-sized ones and even fewer large estates. So we're amongst the norm as a small, artisanal boutique producer.
So, Laura, tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself. How did you fall into this situation?
I'm from Scotland, and I grew up with Italy-loving parents. So your children may have the same experience that I did. And my parents actually brought me to Italy often. And if you'd asked me when I was 10 where I wanted to live, I'd have said in Tuscany. So I during these family holidays, a complete stereotype, I met an Italian chap. And I finished my degree in Britain. I did a degree in English literature, and I was planning. I basically thought I'll just go and dump the Italian boy and then get back to my real life in Britain. And so I moved out here with this explicit intention. And well, I married him instead, and we have three kids. And so I ended up in Montalcino. Marco's from Montalcino, and this is where I ended up living. So then I was immediately drawn to the wine trade, the only thing that really one can do here. And I was actually headhunted, because in 95 I was a rare creature. News got out that there was somebody who spoke two languages and can use a computer. And so everybody wanted me at that stage. So I worked for a wonderful estate for 7 years. And during that time, I became a sommelier. Marco and I opened a cult restaurant with 7 tables and 600 wines. And that was the beginning of my wine education, so to speak, which, of course, I'm still in the middle of.
Now, you live on location today, right, at Il Pozzoni?
I live in a postcard. Everyone who comes here is always insanely jealous of my view and my cypress-lined avenue to my home, yes.
So, not only is, your vineyard or your estate produces great wine, when people visit Tuscany and Montalcino, can they come visit you? I mean, is the estate open for tourists and wine tastings?
It is. It's very un-Californian, I think I can say, insofar as this is true of most estates in Montalcino. We're all small properties, so there's not a tasting room with bottles open. There's not somebody whose job is just welcoming people. So when you contact with very few exceptions, it's really best to book, because if you just roll up, sometimes it can be amazing and you end up having lunch with the family, and sometimes there's just a toothless old granny who sets the dogs on you. I mean, you really can't know what will happen. Yes, I love welcoming people, but I particularly love people who email me with a couple of days notice, and then I can organize my own life and schedule and all the other work that I do, and obviously family concerns, to be able to be available to them and truly spend time with them. So my tours are private, and I take couples, I take single, I don't lump people together ever if I can help it. And it takes, an hour and a half, and we visit the vineyard, but I prefer to have a bit of warning so that I can do it properly.
What is your busy time when tours show up? Is it the spring? Is it the summertime? Or is it harvest time? Because we've always planned our trips, and we do it probably because of cost-saving measures, in the spring, and we've talked about that several times on this podcast. But, for you, when do a lot of people show up and want to visit the vineyard? What time of year?
Well, the real peak times are May and September, October, because, I'm speaking about, let's say, serious NO tourists, the people who are coming because of the wine and food, as opposed to people who are in Tuscany and add on a wine and food experience. So this high season for Montalcino is it's too hot really in the summer to really enjoy the wines we make here. These are hefty reds. So the perfect scenario is to have a fire in the, fire blazing in the restaurant, to be enjoying eating, game and stews and wild boar. And so the best season, I would say, for visiting here is September, October, because it's when the mushrooms start are becoming available, and truffles, and it's all super suited with the wines. And also after harvest, the grapes, the vine leaves change color, so it can be incredibly beautiful. Late October, early November can be wonderful here.
And Il Pelzoni also has its own olive oil, right?
Yes, we make 900 half-liter bottles a year. It's liquid gold, I tell you. We're very precious about it. But yes, we do, and we make it with a lot of love.
So, in American dollars, how much does a bottle of your Brunello cost? How much does a bottle of your olive oil cost?
Ah, I can do this almost exactly. We don't have a channel for our olive oil, so to speak. What I do have is an ownership club where people, I don't know quite what the right verb is, adopt, rent, own a tree here. And if you're a member of this club, you get your name on a ceramic plaque on the tree, and you get a certificate of ownership with the GPS and all, you know, a lot of wonderful add-ons, visiting rights, harvest reports, a photo and all the rest of it. But you also get three bottles shipped to you. So most of my oil goes to members of the club, but I always send some extra to my US colleague, because people run out and they start getting a bit anxious around June, July, when they have no supplies left. So I can tell you that our oils in the US is $35 for one bottle, including shipping, and $180 for six. At the moment, I believe that there are 41 bottles in the U.S.
Okay, now the next question.
None at all. More there than here.
You piqued our interest. How much does it cost for us to become a club member or an owner?
The thing with the club is I closed last year the membership at 200 members.
Total Tuscany wants a membership.
No, that's the thing with exclusive clubs. You know, they have to put a lid on it, but that's because that's 600 bottles, you see, gone, and I need some for selling on site and for our own personal use, no less. But what I'm about to do this October is, as soon as we finish picking the grapes and I can breathe again, I'll be contacting all of the club members and seeing if anyone's dropping out. You know, I have had people divorcing and giving up a tree. So there is always a bit of movement. And so then if I have, let's say, 17 or 18 free trees, then they will be up for grabs. People keep saying it's not expensive enough. The idea wasn't to fleece unsuspecting, you know, consumers. It was about creating a bond. So it costs, I hope to be able to confirm, €135 for 1 year new membership and 110 or 15 euros for renewal. And that includes the shipping and the hand-painted plaque and all the bells and whistles.
Okay, if any trees come available, we want one.
We are in.
We are in.
Right. Well, I will put you on my mailing list then, for the waiting list for the new tree availability. But yeah, often what I've discovered is when people do it for themselves, they never leave. But sometimes it's been given as a gift or a wedding present, new baby present, and in those scenarios, people sometimes choose it was a good experience, but they don't want to necessarily stay in. So I will definitely let you know. I'd be honored to have you.
We always tell our listeners that the olive oil that we taste when we're in Tuscany, in Italy, it's incomparable to what we can buy in the States. And so yes, that's fantastic.
I'm guessing you've come across the book Extra Virginity by Tom Mueller.
I have not. You just gave me a book to read.
Yeah, I can give you more. I have a huge reading list. I could definitely recommend that if you would like some eye-opening information about the availability of olive oil in the US and all the problems and loops in the supply chain. It's a disturbing read, I'm afraid. You'll definitely need to find a direct supplier after that.
So how much for the Brunello in the United States? And are you distributed in the United States?
At the moment we're very well, very present in New York, but we've just started work in California, and we're trying to sort out our distribution in all of the other states very slowly, because we're so small. We need to find the right fit for us and people who, you know, obviously are not put off by the fact that our numbers are quite, you know, limited. So it's in New York. You can find our wines at Italian wine merchants, and we're wonderful by the glass placements, and we're present in a lot of lovely restaurants. And then the rest of the US, it's not quite so easy. But going back to the price, it depends. But our Brunellos probably, I don't know, from maybe 80, it's vintage dependent, but maybe from $80 upwards, 90. I know the 09 is selling for around $90, $99 in some places. And then of course the older years, the five-star years, the reservas, up from there.
And that's not really too bad. I mean, when we go to wine stores in our city, you can find a Brunello upwards of the $90 range. So, I mean, the lowest one we really see is a $50 range, but we've seen some very high as well. And I don't think that's too off the mark, because you know what? You have to pay for greatness, right? You have to pay for greatness.
That's obviously the way I look at it as well. But, you know, I think, again, this is why it's worth coming to visit an estate, any small estate, because once you've seen, you know, what 5 hectares of vineyard plot looks like, you can literally walk it practically in one day. And talking to people who are making wine, the daily decisions, the hard calls, the OCD fussing around with the canopy management. I mean, my husband would say all of our winemaking takes place in the vineyard. He that's what he's been doing for the last 9 months, is obsessing about what we're doing and when we do it. So once you've seen all that, I think, and also the process for Brunello, we're talking of 5 years, 2 of which must be in wood, then I think the price becomes justified. You can see why it's such a business to make as well.
Laura, you say you live in a postcard, and that just fills my imagination with all sorts of scenery. But, you know, you have children, you have a husband, you want to get off site. So if you go anywhere in Tuscany, where do you guys go? What do you, I mean, you live in almost heaven, but when you guys go somewhere in Tuscany, where do you guys go?
Well, it's not actually that easy for Marco and I to go simultaneously anywhere. But when I leave the estate, I love going on Monte Amiata, which is the mountain next to Montalcino. There's a beautiful sculpture garden there. Just for a quick trip. I also, there are wonderful thermal baths, hot springs all over Monte Amiata. So that's another lovely thing to do. We're also, Montalcino is wonderfully placed. We're not far from the sea either. It's less than an hour's drive. Obviously with children as well, sometimes during the summer, I get shipped off to the sea for a week or two, and Marco comes and visits us at the weekends. And, I love Lucca, I love Florence. I have a huge list of cities I would like to get to know better. Siena is also, our closest city is Siena, which is a beautiful place to go to the dentist in.
That's where you have to go to the dentist.
That's our closest cinema. I mean, that's our closest hospital. It's our most local, bigger town. Yeah.
You know, Pat and I, actually, the last time we were in Montalcino, we went to a barber there, and we got a nice clean shave. I'm bald, so I had my head shaved, and Pat got an old-fashioned straight razor shave. So that's our memory from Montalcino.
Yeah, well, there's only one barber left. There used to be more, but just last year, the penultimate barber closed his doors.
Oh, that's sad.
Come back soon. They need your custom.
We will.
Laura, you've been absolutely fascinating, and your story is wonderful. We cannot wait to visit you at Il Palzoni, and we wish you a happy harvest.
Thank you very much indeed. It was lovely speaking to you, and I'm very grateful to have been invited. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Laura lives the life, doesn't she? I mean, what I could handle her life if she wanted to give it to me.
It is a romanticized ideal of what everybody would like. She's a wine expert. She lives in a postcard, and it's just fascinating. I could talk to her for hours about what that life is like.
I thought one of the interesting points was that you just can't go participate in harvest. And even off the air, she talked about how you just can't take that risk with the government. They'll do aerial photography and really check to make sure that you're going by the letter of the law, which, when you think about it, is really important, because you don't want to compromise the harvest process. You don't want to compromise your vintage. And there's a lot more that goes into it than just go pick grapes and drink wine all day.
And I appreciate that. And it's important that it's not a tourist activity.
Yes.
To produce something fantastic.
But we do encourage you to take a tour to Tuscany, and especially if you're there, go to Montalcino, because it's a beautiful city. You will drink great wine. You can see some great vineyards, but the town itself is just, it's quaint, it's fun, and there's just so much to do there.
Oh, there's the outskirts of the city, some beautiful abbeys and beautiful vineyards. And this would, Pausino would be a wonderful place to arrange and have a wine tasting.
Make sure to follow the Tuttle Tuscany podcast on iTunes. You can also find it on Stitcher and the Windows Media Store. If you want to get in contact with Pat or myself, please sign up for our email list. We promise not to spam you because we don't send a lot of emails. Those of you who have signed up know we don't send a lot of emails. But when we want to get in touch and inform you about stuff that's coming up with TotalTuscany.com, that's the best way to get a hold of you. And you can sign up for our email list at TotalTuscany.com. For Pat Campagna, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to this Total Tuscany podcast. And remember, live Tuscan.
Ciao, ciao.